The inventory that I bought for the launch of Actively Black, I thought would last me the first 3 months. It sold out in the first 3 weeks.
Lanny Smith grew up chasing a career of becoming an NBA basketball player until an injury cut his NBA career short almost overnight. So he drew up a new game plan and launched Actively Black, an athleisure brand built to inspire fitness and uplift the Black community.
Everybody told me that this would not work, but I had an undeniable faith and belief in this vision that it didn't matter what anybody said.
He rallied thousands of followers around one mission before even a single product dropped. Those early believers helped drive $2.3 million in first-year sales and paved the way for what is now an eight-figure brand.
Do you know how many shirts and hoodies you have to sell to do $1 million in revenue? And that's not profit, by the way. That's just the top line.
Lanny Smith joins me now to share more on how he's brought his career to new heights by securing millions in funding and partnering with outstanding manufacturing partners. I'm Adam Levinter, and this is Shopify Masters. Lanny, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You were talking about this playbook of going demand first, product second, right? Building that audience before you've got something. Walk me through that.
Yeah. The first brand I actually launched after my NBA career ended in 33 days. It's called Active Faith. It's a faith-based sports apparel brand. My partners in that, Anthony Tolliver and Stephen Curry, who continued to play basketball while I was building the business out of my mom's home. But one of the things that I learned with that brand was the power of community and building an audience. And so going into launching Actively Black, before we had a single product available on the website, the first thing I did was utilizing the power of social media, just really get the idea out there of the concept and the mission and the message of what we were trying to do with Actively Black. And it was really through that process, I think we had 10,000 followers on Instagram, around that same amount of subscribers to our email list. I think about 3,000 subscribers on our text message list. So on launch day, it made it a very successful Black Friday. We actually launched on Black Friday 2020. Mm. And when I think about the differences in the brands, Active Faith, we did about $100,000 in revenue the first year. And with Actively Black, we did $55,000 the first day of Actively Black. And I know part of that difference is because just learning how to build that audience, have them engaged and ready for that drop before we even had the product.
But a lot of founders make that mistake of going product or service first and then audience or community second.
Yeah. I get a lot of people hit me up and they're like, man, I got this great idea for a brand and I want to launch this. And the first thing I tell them is, you know, have you really sat down and think about your audience? Have you built an audience first? Because really what we did was reverse engineer this thing. Instead of, you know, most entrepreneurs will build the product or they'll build the brand and then they'll go try to find somebody to sell it to. We built the audience first and then built product that super served that audience. And it's worked out well for us.
You sort of glossed over these numbers, though. 10,000 emails, you know, a few thousand texts. You had that before a single product is even sold. How does one go about generating, you know, 10,000 email records to market to, for example?
I think part of it is also related to the messaging and the mission and the purpose for what our brand is about, right? It's bigger than the product. It's bigger than just, you know, the world doesn't need another apparel brand, to be honest with you. There's enough out there. So what is it about your brand that is going to speak to your audience in a way where there's a emotional connection? There's something where they feel like I need to be a part of this. And so for Actively Black, it was creating something in a space that lacked any Black ownership. I come from the athletic world. I used to be a professional athlete even growing up. I played for the AAU, the Nike teams, the Adidas teams. These are brands that historically have profited billions of dollars and have been able to do so off the backs of Black talent, Black consumerism, Black culture, but there is no Black ownership in that space. And so I think, you know, for us serving this niche audience that had never seen ownership in this space was something that spoke to them. Representing Black culture and Black history and championing Black culture, I think is something that, I know it hadn't existed in the athleisure sports apparel lane. So when my audience was seeing this, it resonated with them in a way where they were like, no, I gotta sign up. I need to know when they're launching. I need to know when this product is ready. One of the pivots that we made that has actually turned into one of our most meaningful and purposeful collections is our 100% cotton collection. Due to a lot of different economic changes, the global supply chain, all the different things, you know, we made a conscious decision to reshore some of our manufacturing for our 100% cotton collection that is all made from cotton that is grown from Black farmers. So we partnered with Black farmers, and it's made in America. It's 100% cotton. And essentially, we're building a Black-owned supply chain, like literally from the cotton coming out of the ground to it being processed into the fabric to being cut and sewn to us creating the product that I'm wearing one right now that people wear. And it's actually turned into one of our best-selling collections of all time, partly because of the messaging, the purpose, the meaning behind it. You know, Black Americans have had a painful history with cotton for obvious reasons because of the history of slavery in America. But a lot of people don't know that in today's value, there were trillions of dollars of wealth that were generated off of cotton during that time that we were not able to participate in the wealth generation that happened. And so we're looking at this like this isn't reparations, this is reclamation. So you've got these Black farmers who own this land. In fact, Bridgeforth Farms is one of the farms we're working with. They've owned their land for 150 years. They literally can trace back their lineage to Troy Bridgeforth's great, 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 great grandfather was a slave. And after he was able to obtain his freedom, he bought this land and his family has owned it since then. And so this cotton that's coming from this land that they used to have to pick as slaves, they were forced to and they could not profit from it. They now own it and we get to support these farmers with this collection and they own it and they get to profit from it. You know what I mean? It's just it's a powerful story of reclamation that we're able to do through this brand, and our audience has resonated with it in a very powerful way.
How long was that process of generating demand, building that audience? And in the background, were you working on, say, your first line of SKUs? Right?
Yeah. I mean, my first brand, Active Faith, is very similar in that it's the same product. It's just a different audience and different messaging and different purpose. So I already had my manufacturing partner. I was already working on what those SKUs would be. I just hadn't launched it yet. I hadn't invested into the inventory of that yet. I really wanted to see what touched my audience, what moved my audience. And they really kind of helped inform me on this should be the first collection that we drop. And even with that, those learnings that I had from building the first brand, I knew that it was much cheaper to sell to an existing customer than to acquire a new customer. So the inventory that I bought for the launch of Actively Black, I thought would last me the first 3 months. It sold out in the first 3 weeks. And instead of just restocking that existing collection, I kind of split that and I restocked some of that, but then I also brought in a new collection because everybody who bought the first collection then came and bought the next one. Those existing customers that had bought that product and were happy with it, I earned their trust already. So when I dropped the next collection, I didn't have to even advertise that. As soon as I sent that email blast out or that text message blast out, they came for the next collection.
They just had to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
So you said in the past, fast growth can kill you just like no growth. So 55,000 in top line revenue in one day is insane.
Yeah.
What did that first year look like?
I think we did 2.1 million the first 12 months of Actively Black being in existence, but we were probably sold out 6 months out of that 12 months. So there's no telling what we could have done if, you know, I had the inventory to meet the demand. The other side of creating that demand is can you supply it? You know what I mean? And I've been behind on demand since day one. And to this day, as I'm talking to you, I'm still behind and I still have not caught up to demand. It's a great problem to have, but it's a problem nonetheless that I'm trying to solve for.
What have you learned from those operational challenges? Is it, you know, better manufacturing partners? Is it shorter lead times?
Yeah.
Is it onshoring manufacturing? What is the answer?
I mean, it's a combination of things. I think, you know, for our product, we make premium athleisure wear products. So the same thing that you'll go see at a Nike or Adidas or a Lululemon or Alo. We're making that from scratch. Like, I'm not buying pre-made blanks that we're just throwing our logo on. We're sourcing the best athleisure wear materials that all the rest of the top companies are using. And to cut and sew, to create that inventory, it takes 30 to 45 days just to make the inventory. That's before you put it on the boat, which may take another 30 to 45 days. Even trying to do the demand planning, we're in such a fast growth phase where our historical data becomes obsolete the moment I place that inventory order. There's so many people finding out about Actively Black every single day that by the time that actually gets to me 2 to 3 months later, those numbers are obsolete. You know what I mean? And it's hard to pinpoint how much we actually need to order. And then we've been blessed with so many incredible partnerships that I think have multiplied that brand awareness. So when you're talking about partnerships with Disney and Marvel and Star Wars and the Muhammad Ali estate and the Tupac estate and Malcolm X estate and the Martin Luther King estate and the Bob Marley estate, we've had collaborations with all of these different people. Those things have just multiplied the demand to where we're still trying to catch up to it. So
talk to me about that partnership side of the business. Yeah. So how do these partnerships happen? Who was the first big partnership that you landed?
The collab for Marvel Wakanda Forever, Black Panther Wakanda Forever was the first major one, which is a huge full circle moment for me because the first Black Panther movie was even part of the inspiration behind creating Actively Black. For me, like seeing that first movie, seeing a Black superhero with hair like mine, with skin like mine, it was like the power of representation in seeing this positive image of a Black male as a superhero that I got to see even as a grown man. It really impacted me in an incredible way. And I remember walking out of the theater and saying, man, I want to create a brand that makes my people feel the way that movie made us feel. So that's 2018 when that movie came out. Fast forward to after launching Actively Black, Damon John, famous, you know, Shark Tank now, but founder of FUBU, which was a brand that I was just obsessed with growing up, he reached out and wanted to do a FUBU Actively Black collab.
Wow.
And I'll never forget, he had a meeting here in Los Angeles and he walks into the meeting and he's wearing an Actively Black hoodie. I was trying to keep my cool in the meeting, you know what I mean? But inside I was like, yo, I was obsessed with FUBU growing up. Like I used to beg my mother to buy me a piece of FUBU and the guy who created FUBU was wearing my hoodie.
Yeah.
And I was just insane. And we're in the meeting and he asked me, well, what else are you working on? And I showed him this deck of what an Actively Black Black Panther collab would look like. Just because I was so inspired by the first movie, I had this deck designed. And he looked at it, and in the middle of the meeting, he picked up the phone, he called the head of licensing for Marvel and Disney, and said, you need to see what I just saw just now. Hmm. 3 days later, I'm in a pitch meeting with the head of, you know, licensing for Marvel and Disney, and they loved what I put together. And when the sequel movie was coming out, we got the official collaboration. And so that was huge for us. I mean, it really... the brand awareness, the legitimacy that it gave our brand really opened the doors. And I believe it was Lani Ali, Muhammad Ali's wife, who found out about us because of that collaboration and reached out. And,
yeah, I mean,
and,
I would think there'd be like some sort of cascading effect, right? Somebody goes first and then you have all this other interest that sort of bubbles up as a result of that. Do you feel like when these partnerships come together that you have to check to make sure that they're aligned with your vision, with what you see for the brand?
Yeah. I mean, Actively Black is a very purpose-driven brand. It's something that I'll never compromise on. You know, I really wanted to build something that was Black-owned, that could uplift the Black community and have these messages that are positive, you know what I mean, for our people. And so any partnership we do has to align with the Actively Black brand is about, you know what I mean? But when I think about what we've been blessed to be a part of, Wakanda Forever, you know, Muhammad Ali and what he stood for in and outside of the ring, you know, me and his wife had an incredible conversation where it was like, if Muhammad Ali was alive today and he was having to choose a sports apparel brand to sign with, it would be Actively Black. You know what I mean? The Malcolm X estate, the Martin Luther King estate, these partnerships are ones that align with our brand so perfectly that it only makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it's the same for taking on venture capital? Like ensuring that whoever is investing in your company, in your brand, has the same vision.
1,000%. 1,000%. I mean,
and you've raised right north of $7 million at this point.
Yeah. Kwame Anku from Black Star Fund and Rich Lou Dennis from New Voices Fund invested in Actively Black. And they're two funds that specifically try to invest in underrepresented founders. You know what I mean? Black founders receive less than 0.3% of all venture capital funding. And their funds are trying to correct for that. So I was blessed to be one of those who they invested in. They saw the vision and what I was building. And when you're taking on an investor, it's a marriage. You know what I mean? It's a relationship that is a long-term thing that you have to be aligned in order for it to work. And making sure that they understand your vision and where you're trying to take this thing and where you're trying to go. If you want that relationship to be a fruitful one, you know, I think you have to make sure of that before you take any money from somebody who wants to invest in the company.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's sound advice. Harder for founders when they really need that capital. True. And that's when they start to make those sacrifices.
True.
And those relationships go awry. They've taken on that venture money, but there's misalignment right from the beginning. And that's where things go astray.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you're quite principled in that regard. So
yeah, I was blessed to find some investors who have the same vision and the same principles in what we're trying to build.
So 33 days into your NBA career, you have this injury?
Yeah. Yeah.
Career ending.
I mean, devastating. You know what I mean? I had no plan B. Mm. To make it to the NBA was a dream that I had since I was 4 years old. There was nothing else that I wanted to do in my life. I don't think a lot of people understand there's only 450 slots in the NBA. There's a million kids that want to be playing. Everybody wants to play in the NBA. There's only 450 slots, and all 450 slots are not open every year. And there's 60 guys that get drafted every year trying to take whatever, you know, slots are. So you're talking less than lottery ticket chances to actually make it to the NBA. And to be blessed and fortunate to sign that contract was just, I mean, it was the highest of highs, you know what I mean? To think of something that you want to do since you were 4 years old and to actually be able to walk into an NBA locker room and put on a jersey and it's got your name on the back was an unbelievable feeling. And then, you know, 33 days after that to, you know, have the knee injury that I had and then have two microfracture surgeries and it's all over with. I'm going to make sure I do not get emotional on this one. I get emotional whenever I tell the story, but I went through the depression. I went through the identity crisis. You know, my whole life it was, you know, that's Lanny the basketball player. Everybody knew me. That's who I was. That became my identity. And now this basketball is taken away and it's like, well, who am I without this basketball? You know what I mean? And so honestly, I think entrepreneurship was something that also kind of saved me and kind of helped bring me out of that dark place. I was able to channel all of that energy, all of that passion, every, you know, that work ethic, the things that I don't think people understand that entrepreneurs have to go through to take a dream out of your head and actually make it to be a reality. There's a level of sacrifice that I don't think people really understand. Yeah. I understood that because of the sacrifice that I made to make it to the NBA. You know what I mean? Those nights where I had to tell my friends, yo, I can't go to the party because I got to go back to the gym to get these extra shots up. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same thing now. There's times where, you know, my friends want to go hang out. It's like, man, I got to be up with my manufacturer tonight till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And that's just what I have to do. It's taken everything that I was doing to make it to the league and it's transferred into this lane that I'm in now. So
what are those character traits that one has to have to become the best of the best in the NBA or to become an entrepreneur who is scaling a successful business? There must be some character traits that you've identified to carry through.
I say one, got to be delusional. You have to have this undeniable belief in whatever your dream, whatever your vision is, that nothing can deter that. And you have to be delusional. And but your work ethic has to match that level of delusion. There's a lot of people who talk about like manifestation and all those things, and it's not your Instagram post, it's not your vision board. Are you willing to sacrifice everything that it takes to make this thing happen? A lot of people will talk that, but the action behind it has to follow. So I think it's delusion, because in the same way that there's a lottery ticket chance of making it to the NBA, I'm in apparel. It's like one of the worst. I would never, ever tell anybody to get into the apparel business. I'm serious. Yeah. Like,
you never advise someone to jump into the apparel business.
Ever. So many people hit me up, man, I got this cool saying, I got this cool idea, put it on a shirt and hoodie, it's going to make $1 million. I'm like, man, if you only knew it doesn't work that way. Like, do you know how many shirts and hoodies you have to sell to do $1 million in revenue? And that's not profit, by the way. That's just the top line. You know what I'm saying? And like, nobody ever really thinks like, man, how many shirts and hoodies do I actually have to sell just to do $1 million in revenue? You know what I mean? Right. And the failure rate is extremely high. I think for most startups, I think it's like, what is it, like 80% fail within the first 24 months or something like that?
Less than 4% get to $1 million in revenue.
There you go. You know what I'm saying?
And those are the ones that launch and do some revenue. I'm saying have some product market fit.
Yep.
Gives you an idea. I mean, there's that whole cohort of startups that never generate a dollar. So
yeah. So it's lottery ticket chances. You know what I mean? And so when you ask about those characteristics, I think anybody who plays professional sports is a little crazy. You have to be to think that I can actually be one of those 450 or however many there is in the NFL or Major League Baseball, knowing that there's millions of people trying to get these limited amount of spots. You got to be a little crazy. You know what I mean? And I even tell people when they hit me up and ask me about starting something, and I said, don't do it. I'm telling you right now, don't do it. And the ones that listen to me and don't do it, you didn't have what it was going to take to do it anyway, because you're going to face so many no's, so many rejections, so many people telling you it's not going to work, that if me telling you don't do it was enough to get you to not do it, then you actually don't have what it's going to take to do it. You know what I mean? Everybody told me I was crazy launching this. Everybody told me that this would not work. But I had an undeniable faith and belief in this vision that it didn't matter what anybody said.
Well, it only took you a day to prove them wrong with 55,000 in revenue the first day, so.
I wouldn't consider that success. I'm blessed and fortunate. I know that's not the norm, but there were years that led into that one day. I'll just put it like that. It wasn't that one day. It was years. It was tears. It was rejection. It was a lot that led to that one day to start. And there's been the rejections and the tears and the failures since that first day. You know what I mean? Like, that's another thing is, like, it don't stop. That's another trait with a lot of professional athletes is you can never be satisfied even with whatever level of success that you have. You know, Kobe Bryant added something new to his game every offseason. Michael Jordan added something to his game every offseason. They're never satisfied. And once you get to the point where you're like, yeah, I made it, that's dangerous times for you.
What happened after the injury? How long does it take for you to find entrepreneurship, or does entrepreneurship find you? How does this happen?
Man, I feel like my life has been one of those where I haven't just experienced certain things. I've been collecting experiences that all have, like, led to these different moments in my life. So in 2008, while I was still playing, I was invited to go on the NBA Asia Tour. And we played in exhibition games in the Philippines, South Korea, and in China. And we were in China. We actually got to go on a tour of a factory. And I didn't know this was going to be in my future, but I was just intrigued by the way these things worked. And I was talking to the tour guide and asking different questions. And I was just very inquisitive. And at the end of the tour, he was like, man, thank you for paying attention to, you know, most people don't really pay attention like that. I think we befriended each other on Facebook at the time. And fast forward, I get hurt. My career's over with. I decide I want to start Active Faith. And I was like, man, I don't want to just do t-shirts and hoodies. I want to do, like, real moisture wicking fabrics and athleisure wear. I need a real manufacturer for this. I was able to go back to that Facebook message and hit that guy up from, you know, a few years earlier. And he pointed me in a direction to find him, you know, my first manufacturer. And so I think that I'm walking in a purpose for my life, and all these different things have kind of, like, just added a tool to my toolbox that I'm now using for what I'm doing. You know what I mean? So I don't know if that answers the question, but you know, that's a great question. Did I find entrepreneurship, or did entrepreneurship find me? I think it was whatever this is that I'm walking in was part of whatever the plan for my life is.
Do you lament the injury same way you did after it first happened? I mean, the way that I think about it is you still reached your dream. You made that happen.
Yeah.
Right? You still made it to the NBA.
Yeah.
Everyone's career ends at a certain point. Your career happens to end after 33 days. Some people's career ends after 10 years, and they still have trouble figuring out what they want to do, you know, post-career, whether it's NBA, NFL, NHL, whatever. So in all the work that you've done over the past, you know, decade plus, or how long has it been since you were hurt?
I mean, that was 2009, so I don't even know. What is that?
Have you reframed it in a certain way that you think, oh, you know what? Maybe I was meant to do this. Maybe I was meant to be a founder.
I have accepted that. I believe that was a necessary part of my journey for me to walk in the purpose that I'm walking now, but I still have my moments. It could be late at night. It could be watching an NBA game. It could be being in the gym where that what if was still, like, in the back of my mind, like, what if you didn't get hurt? Where would you be, or how would your dream had unfolded if you did not get hurt? And there's still pain there. There are times where I'm still mourning the death of that dream, you know what I'm saying? And I get invited. I've been speaking at rookie transition program, and NBA brings me back, I don't know, for the last, I don't know how many years, to talk to guys about transitioning into life after basketball. And to the point that you just made, I mean, there's guys who have played 15 years in the league and still are having that trouble transitioning into life after that. So the length of time, to your point, may not matter. There's always going to be that difficulty in that transition. And part of it is because this thing becomes a part of you. You know, it becomes your identity. It becomes something that your self-esteem was built on, your self-identity was built on. And so that transition is tough for all of us.
You know, this happens with founders a lot after they exit their business. They don't quite know what they want to do next. Mm. And they believe they've lost a piece of themselves.
I've heard that. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's a phenomenon that extends far beyond professional sports.
Yeah.
And Actively Black is pretty active in terms of the way that it supports mental health, Black-related community initiatives. Talk to me a little bit about that angle of the business.
Yeah. You know, I've told people often that I'm not really building an apparel brand, right? The apparel is the uniform for the movement is what I'll say. But it's really like the apparel is what I am actually using to build this audience and build this community. And then I get to serve them in different ways outside of just, you know, another hoodie or another shirt. So Black Mental Health is one of the initiatives that we are very much invested in. And I say Black mental health because, you know, mental health is a thing recently that's now, it's a buzzword, it's a thing that's being talked about. But even with that, the access to it, there's still a lot of barriers. There's a lot of people in the Black community that don't have access to a therapist, that don't have access to mental health services, you know what I mean? And we hold mental health events that are free for the community. We partner with different organizations to try to, you know, get that access to therapists for those who are seeking that therapy and don't have that access. Black maternal health is another huge thing. There's an organization called Black Mamas Matter that we support. So right now in the United States, Black women die at 3 times the rate of any other women in this country during pregnancy. 3 times the rate of anybody else. And it's something that is dear to me for many reasons, but even now more so because my co-founder and my lady, my queen, is pregnant with our first child.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you.
I didn't have that in my notes.
This is, you know, breaking news. And so to know the challenges that a lot of these women face with healthcare and getting the proper care and people who are actually listening to their pain and what they're going through, that's something that's very important. We support Black Kids Code, getting more of the Black youth introduced to STEM, to science, to coding, to understanding those things, because the flip side of what we were talking about earlier with the 450 jobs in the NBA and me thinking that was my only way to be successful is if there's 1 million kids trying to get there and there's only 450 jobs, how many kids are not making it? You know what I mean? And then are faced with the reality of, man, what am I going to do with my life? I spent 18 years of my life trying to work to be in the NBA or the NFL, and then that didn't happen. Now, what am I doing with the rest of my life? You know what I mean? And so I think we have to get our youth more exposed so that they understand these are not your only paths to success. You know, you can be an engineer, you could be a founder, you can be a C-suite executive. There's so many things that you can do to be successful, but they need to be exposed to that so they can see those as options. And so those are all things that you know, we try to support with the brand.
How important do you think that it is to attach a mission separate from the company itself to the company itself? Do you know what I mean? Like, for example, you know, Tom's Shoes was incubated on a mission.
Yeah.
Charity Water the same way. And then I think about other companies that are sort of, they were product first and then they brought in mission later on, but it was sort of like an afterthought.
Yeah.
Right? They sort of do it in the background.
Yeah.
There are companies that are saying, wait a second, we don't have a mission. You know, we need to have a mission.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a prerequisite now for companies to start from, you know, inning one?
I honestly think it's a reflection or a projection of the heart of the founder or of the founding group or whatever the case may be. There are some people who start companies just to go make as much money as possible. Right. And that's really their motivation.
That's sort of the default.
Yeah. So, how do I make as much money as possible? You know what I mean? When I launched Actively Black, I can't remember a single conversation that me and my co-founder had where it's like, yo, how can we make the most money out of this? It was, how do we build something that can positively impact our community and our people? So it was mission-driven and purpose-led from the beginning. Money is a tool. It is a function of what we have to do. We have to be profitable in order to be able to give back money. You know what I mean? Like all those things play a part into it. But you know, the reason I want Actively Black to be a multi-billion dollar brand is not just so that we can be labeled a unicorn or whatever they're calling them these days and be able to say, yeah, I'm a billion dollar founder. It's that now allows me, how many people can I hire? How many people can get jobs because of that? How many organizations can we support because we are now at this level and we can do that? So I think it has to be authentic, first and foremost. There are a lot of companies that are now like, well, let's go find a mission to do just so it looks as if they're doing something and it's really just a marketing scheme. You know what I mean? I think it has to be authentic. And if you're really about that, then especially today, the consumer has been over-marketed to, has been over-advertised to. People want to feel something. People want to be a part of something. People want to know that what they're buying supports something that they believe in. So, you know, I definitely think it's helpful. It's definitely helped us for sure.
I think that's right. I mean, we see this phenomenon with consumers really wanting to know who is the face behind the company.
Yeah.
Who's the CEO?
Yeah.
You know, it used to be the case that, you know, the company was completely divorced from the C-suite.
Yep.
Nowadays, with the advent of social media, you need to have that CEO front and center, that founder front and center. And for the first time ever, I think there's not this clear separation between the company and the founder.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually been something that I struggled with early on because I had my moment of, you know, people knowing who Lanny was because of basketball. You know what I mean? I've been in arenas where there's thousands of people looking at me and I've got the ball in my hand and they're trying to, what is Lanny going to do? Like, I don't need any more spotlight time. But what I recognized early on with the brand where people were asking that question, well, who's really behind this? Who's the founder? You know, they wanted to know. And it kind of forced me to start putting my face in front of it more than what, I'm still not comfortable with it, but I know that it's actually part of what has to be done in order to build this brand and for it to go where it needs to go. People want to know. They want to know, well, what are you about? What do you support? What do you believe? Because before I'm going to part with my hard-earned money to support your brand, I need to know who it is that's behind this. And I've actually found that the more and more I've started sharing my story, sharing my heart, sharing my why that I'm doing this, that's probably worked better than any advertising that we've done because people are now like they are connected to this thing and then they're telling everybody they know about it. Like, man, did you see this guy and why he's building Actively Black? And that's honestly been the best marketing for us, even though that's not really the purpose for it.
I would agree with that. And by the way, we appreciate you sitting here, telling your story. Very exciting stuff. Congratulations, Lanny. Appreciate you being here.
No, thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning into the show today. Be sure to follow and subscribe to Shopify Masters. I'm Adam Levinter, and we'll see you next time.